Now, I understand Tony comes down and he does this bit. Is that right? So it's okay if I do this. I'm not going to scare you out the back door or whatever. But since I am the lay speaker of the district and the new lay speaker of the district, you are my first church that I'm visiting on the district. So thank you. I'm trying all this out on you all this morning. Thank you for being my guinea pigs. But Tony asked me to come because Tony and I go back a long ways. Tony was a member of my church, Trinity United Methodist Church, up in Alexandria, Virginia, when he decided to go into the ministry. So Tony and Mary Ruth were there when Charlotte was born. I think they were just about to leave at that point as he was going to ministerial school. And we had been in Sunday school class together and worshiped together for several years while Tony was constantly hearing that call and decided to respond to it. So it's a real privilege for me to be here visiting with you, my first church on the district. Will you pray with me, please? Dear God, why are we here today? Why are we here? I ask that you be with me as I deliver these words today, that they may be spoken in your honor, to your glory, and that they may be heard as words to remind people of their purpose in being here. And I thank you for this opportunity. Amen. Well, the title in the bulletin says, "Why are you here? Why are you here?" And that's a question I want you to think about the whole time I'm giving my talk this morning. So don't listen to me. Just think about why you are here. Because my talk is going to tell you why I am here. I'm going to tell you my faith journey story today. But you should consider all during the talk why you're here. Whether you're a first timer, whether you've been here 2 months, or whether you've been here 20 years, you've got a faith story. And you need to be sure you review your faith story, that you know you have a faith story. And that story is one to be shared with others. So, let me begin. It begins with my parents. Don't most of our stories of our faith journey begin with our parents? I see a son sitting back there. I'm sure it began with his parents. My parents were members of churches and very active participant in churches. Notice I'm saying churches because my dad was a member of the Suffolk Christian Church and my mother was a member of Main Street United Methodist Church. The two churches were in a small town, as you've heard, Suffolk, Virginia, small peanut marketplace of the world, down near Norfolk. They were separated by the telephone building. So we had the Methodist Church, the Christian Church. Across the street from the Christian Church was the Episcopal Church, and five buildings down was the Baptist Church. Should have been called Church Street, but it wasn't. It was called Main Street. Can't figure out why they didn't name it Church Street. So my family drove to church, to Sunday school and church together, and then we walked to our separate buildings. At the point when I was a teenager, my parents thought, well, maybe we should, for the family, consider joining one of the churches. But when they looked at their involvement, my mother was active in the WSCS, and for some of you ladies, you know that was the precursor to United Methodist Women. My mother served on the administrative board. My dad was active in the finance committee and served on his church board. They went to single-sex Sunday school classes. My dad went to the men's Baraka class. My mother went to the women's Bible class. The only time they would have been together was that 1 hour worship on Sunday morning because they were so busy and so involved. And they decided it wasn't that important to be members of one church. And besides, when Easter came, we did the Easter bit at the Methodist church, and then we went and did it at the Christian church. So you see, I was always in church when I was growing up. But remember, we're talking about a small town now, and church was the social institution in those days. It's not like today where we have soccer and everything else that's pulling us six different ways. So we continued to go our separate ways there. When I was 7 years old, I started taking piano lessons. And very soon after I started, they figured I knew enough piano that I could play a couple of the hymns in the primary department. Now, the primary department in those days, for some of you who don't remember how we used to divide these huge Sunday school classes out, and they were big in that day, even in a small town. Primary department was first, second, and third graders, and there were approximately 40 or 50 first, second, and third graders in the primary department. Big Sunday school classes. So I was asked to play the piano for the opening exercises in this group. Many times I was asked to stay on and take a small class of six or eight children when a teacher had not been able to come that morning, and take the Bible study leaflet for the day, do the Bible story with the kids, and probably a little craft project. So you can hear already that I did not go to my regular Sunday school class very often. I usually was there with the primary department. If I went up to the junior class or the senior class, I was always late anyway. So I've enjoyed telling Christian educators, or enjoyed, I have told Christian educators over the last few years, my Christian education stopped at the third grade level. So when I'm talking to you at third grade level today, that's where I'm coming from. A few years after that, I started taking organ lessons. Well, my church organist thought if he wanted to know he was going to have a summer substitute for the month when he was on vacation, he'd better see that I was trained pretty quickly to play the organ for that August month of vacation. So he did train me, and I did all the way through high school and college perform the duties of the summer substitute organist there. Not only at the Methodist church, but I played at the Christian church. I played at the Baptist church. I played at the Presbyterian church. I even played at the Catholic church, believe it or not. So you see, I mean, where was God in all of this as I was coming along? Where was God? I was becoming very ecumenical very early in my life here. After high school, I went to Randolph-Macon Women's College. And you know that that is a Methodist-related school. So I spent my 4 years there. And believe it or not, I still continue to go to worship on Sunday morning. Now, I know that you know, by the time students get away to college, out of from under mom and dad's thumb, they very seldom attend worship service. And it also becomes a period of questioning if they have any kind of a faith background at all. They want to make up their minds whether or not they want to go to church, whether they want to believe, or what they want to believe. But I continued to attend the Methodist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia, the whole time I was at Randolph-Macon. And I was also part of the Methodist student group that was there. Now, I had one very interesting thing that happened my junior year at Randolph-Macon that I was to remember much stronger in later years as I was working with United Methodist Women. My junior year, two seniors went downtown Lynchburg to the Woolworths department store, dime store, and sat in with two African Americans at the lunch counter there. I'm talking 1961. Some of you remember that, and some of you have no idea what it was like at that time. Schools were integrated in 1964. So we're talking 1961. Two Randolph-Macon Women's College students. I mean, what were people going to think about this college and the women that were being trained at this college? Two of them went downtown and sat at this lunch counter with African Americans to be sure that those African Americans were allowed to be at that lunch counter. Unheard of. So it was interesting to see how the faculty responded to that. The girls went to jail for 30 days. The two Randolph-Macon girls went to jail. Probably the first and only time in the existence of the school that they've had students in jail. Professors took them all their work. They completed their senior papers. They prepared for their senior exams. And they graduated with their class. And this all happened, it was either April or May of that year. So we were very close to graduation. But they got out of jail just a few days before graduation time, and they did graduate with their class. That made a deep impression on me, and I never really realized how much of an impression until Days of United Methodist Women, who are the real social active people in your church. After graduating from Randolph-Macon, I worked for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, Ohio for a couple of years. I was still attending church. I can remember walking to church downtown lunchtime. They had a noonday service, and I would go down. Part of the attraction was the music. I enjoyed the organ music while I was attending that church. After a couple of years, I married my husband, Jesse Stewart, who was a Navy fighter pilot. And so we lived on the West Coast. We lived on the East Coast. We attended worship wherever we were. We were active in churches occasionally, depending on how long we were places. I was still substitute playing organ for the Episcopal Church and the Baptist Church, wherever. So I was still being very ecumenical. And then 26 years ago, we came here to Alexandria. 26 years ago. Our adopted son, Tommy, was 2 years old. So we were looking for a church when we came to Alexandria. Now, I want to stop in my story here. I hope you're thinking about your story. Are you thinking about your story? Are you hearing God in my story? If you're not thinking about your story, I want you to hear God in my story. But when we started looking for a church in Alexandria, this is what all the statistics tell us today. That it's the young families, the young adults with small children that will be looking for a church home. And we have to be ready to receive these young families with open arms, caring arms. And here we know in the Washington area, young families that come in here are coming away from their nuclear families. They don't have anybody to help with babysitting. They don't have any support system. They come here and it's a young family with one child, two children, and they're thrown here and they think, oh my goodness, how am I ever going to teach this child any values? I know, I've heard that churches teach some kind of values or some kind of morals. Let's go to church Sunday morning and find out how that neighborhood church is going to receive us and how they will love and take care of our child. So we as United Methodists, we as Christians, have to be prepared to receive those new young families. And we're seeing that up in Trinity right now. We're having a turnover in the neighborhood from all of those families that built and came here in the 40s when the Pentagon was built, and now the young families are coming and the children as they're buying into that community up there. And boy, are we working hard up there to be prepared to greet and love and care for the younger families. So we came here, my husband and my son Tom and I, and we joined Trinity. About a year after we joined Trinity, the pastor came to me one day and said, "Sue, I'm thinking about a new staff position here. Our DCE has just quit to go back to school, and we need somebody who will take care of all the programs, children's, youth, adult. Anything else I want you to do, mission trips, retreats, Advent studies, Lenten studies, all of the above." So he says, "I want to ask you to come on board as the program coordinator for the church." So I talked to my husband about it. My husband has been with me now all these years through this faith journey. We've been partners in this journey. Talked to my husband about it, prayed about it, went back and accepted that job as the program coordinator at Trinity. I worked there for 15 years under four different pastors, and let me tell you something. If that wasn't a PhD education in Christian education, I may not have had it before, but all the things that I learned during that 15 years that I was on staff at Trinity, how important they were. And still learning. So I wound up serving as your district president for United Methodist Women for 4 years, quite involved in the mission activity here and promoting the global mission that United Methodist Women is a part of. At that time, I remembered something my mother had said to me many years ago. Hadn't thought about it for years. Had not even crossed my mind. And all of a sudden, it's one of those. My mother had said, "Want to be a part that are continually and about the world. It's United Methodist Women." And how right she was. United Methodist Women are out there in the forefront with educating us about missions and needs around the world. I'm going down to Blackstone in 2 weeks for the School of Christian Mission. I know some of you have probably been down there over the years. So my time ended with United Methodist Women, and the district superintendent, Alan Reifsnyder, came to me after the nominations committee and said, "Sue, Jeff Henderson, a lay leader, is ending his time and moving out of the area. Would you consider working as the lay leader for the district?" So again, I went home and talked to my husband and prayed about it, and here I am today. Now that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's my story. It's no conversion on the road to Damascus. There's nothing exciting about this story. It's a very plain, simple story about God being active in my life all the way through. I told you it started with my parents. And you can think back over the way I've shared the story with you. Why do you think I was taking piano lessons? Why was I taking organ lessons? Why was I at Randolph Macon Women's College? Why did I get hired at Trinity? None of these things was I looking for. So why am I here today? The question for you is, why are you here today? As I said early on, you have a story. And there's somebody out there who needs to hear your story. And then after you've told the story, what are we going to do about it to meet the needs of those out there in our community? I hope that this afternoon and this week you'll think about what your story is and why you were here today. It's a question I want to leave with you, and I hope you don't forget it. Thank you. It's been a pleasure being with you.